Welcome to the Apple Context Machine, a podcast about all things Apple, with your hosts, Jeff Gamet and Brian Chaffin.
Today is July 26th, 2010, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 174, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, phaser instructor. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM.
Pew, 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 pew. Pew, 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 pew.
At macobserver.com.
Best sound effects ever.
Mm-hmm. Now, by the way, one of the reasons why we always laugh when I give my stupid title is because it's usually playing on something we've been talking about recently. So,
right. So even though it may not be incredibly funny to all of our listeners, at least Brian is keeping me entertained. And, you know, that's a big thing to me.
In fact, incredibly funny may not be the words that some of our listeners come up with. They may think of moronic, insipid, perplexing. Probably some similar words, I'm sure.
You know, tomato, tomato.
And in this case, I was regaling Jeff earlier with my impression of Worf from Star Trek The Next Generation.
Which I absolutely love your impression.
Well, this morning, though, I still had more of my cold voice because I was sick all last week. And through today, some of my cold voice has gone away. So I will try it for you, but it may not be as good as it was just a mere few hours ago.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
All right. Let's try this. Hold on. Captain, sensors indicate instant crusher is dead ahead. Recommend full phaser fire immediately.
See, I am so easy to entertain. And I'm picturing you with your little gold sash on and your forehead Captain. Ridges.
I just like the notion that the instant crusher, and I like Will Wheaton today. I still do not like the character of Ensign Crusher from Star Trek The Next Generation, but I just like the idea that he's like somehow floating out in space and then Worf detects it and immediately wants to start firing phasers. It's funny imagery to me.
You know, and you're right. Will Wheaton rocks.
He's awesome.
He is a very, very cool guy.
Did you know that he was on Eureka, this most recent episode of Eureka?
Well, I follow Will on Twitter, so... Mm-hmm.
As do I.
Yes. And he's going to be on, I don't know if it's multiple episodes this next season, or at least one more episode this season.
Well, that makes sense that he's got a recurring character, actually.
Oh, okay.
Do you watch Eureka?
No, but that's because I have the bare bones cable package.
Ah.
And so I don't have Sci-Fi Channel or the Syphilis Channel, whatever they call it now.
Hulu is your friend. Hulu is your friend. You can watch Eureka till the end.
Why aren't these companies paying you?
It's not very good. Yeah, I watch it on Hulu, though. It's a good show. It's not my favorite sci-fi show, but it's a good show. And Will Wheaton was fantastic on it. And before we... get too much further into the world of sci-fi, maybe we should go ahead and talk about some of the Apple related things that we're supposed to talk about today.
Oh, okay.
And I say that with self-mocking, folks, because I'm a huge sci-fi science fiction fan in general.
All right. Well, then one more thing, sci-fi, before we hop into the rest of the show.
Yeah.
Since you like Eureka, Felicia Day is going to be a guest on one of the Eureka episodes of season two.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, that's grand. Grand. I love Felicia.
She rocks.
She rocks, and she was so good in Dr. Horrible, and she has been doing such a great job with The Guild, which at least is vaguely Mac-related.
Sure, because they need computers.
Well, the guild is all about, then it's unnamed, but it's a World of Warcraft guild. And you can play World of Warcraft on your Mac.
Right, and you can download the Will You Date My Avatar video from the iTunes store, which is an Apple thing.
Yes.
I know, giving us even
more legitimacy.
Yes.
Okay, now first of all, by the way, we should before we actually get into the show, we didn't talk about this when we were putting everything together, but we got a winner for our thing.
That's right, our
questions last month. What? So Michael Vizee actually pegged us on a couple of things. First of all, and I actually don't know if he's joking. Michael, you fill us in. Let us know if you were actually joking. But we had asked if anybody could point us to an Allen & Company website that we would send them a copy of Incredible iPad. Incredible iPhone Apps for Dummies. Which is
easy to mix up because they sound so familiar.
They sound similar. So familiar, especially to me. And that's a Bob Levitis book, Dr. Mac book that I contributed to, and which is why I picked it. And he said, "Didn't you know Allen & Company had a website, but it, like the rest of GeoCities, went down last October when Yahoo closed GeoCities." I think he's not joking. I think he's serious.
If he is joking, well played, sir. Well played.
Well played. And whether or not he did, he also found some click here examples at the Mac Observer.
And what was it, like three?
He found three examples because we asked people because we both hate click here. Right. We don't do that. And in the probably 20,000 articles that we've published at the Mac Observer over the last 13 years, maybe even more. He was able to find three examples plus another example of me giving an example of what not to do.
Which is like a little bit of delicious irony.
Yeah, indeed. So I'm pleased that there were only three and horrified that there are three. And he found them. So one way or another, he's getting a copy of the book.
That's true. And yeah, we both dislike the click here link thing so much that, it's like every time it happens, Tim Berners-Lee kicks a kitten.
Exactly. And in the meanwhile, Laura LeMay is my secret lover. Alrighty, yeah. So that is our background and catching up. Thanks to Michael for catching that stuff, and you'll be getting a book from Dr. Mac, and I'm guessing he will autograph it.
Well, that would be cool.
Mm-hmm. So, in the meanwhile, we have a special show. Let's do it.
Okay. All right. In this special edition of the Apple Context Machine, we take a look at India's $35 tablet computer, and we take a bird's eye view of Apple's iPhone 4.
So we're going to start today talking about a prototype that was unveiled in India of a $35 tablet, a tablet, a functioning tablet computer, they say would take $35 to make. $35 in parts.
Right. And and as you pointed out in your article about this, but it's important we remind everyone, this is not a tablet computer that's being designed to compete with the iPad.
Right. It is a tablet computer. It has so it basically it's it you know could never in a jillion years be as small as the iPad, obviously, and it will never in a jillion years have a display that's anywhere near as good as the iPads, let alone the next iPads.
Right, and if you can build something like this with $35 worth of parts, then you're clearly building something out of just standard off the shelf components.
Absolutely.
Which means it will be bigger and heavier than an iPad.
Absolutely. And again, limited functionality. And specifically, it's supposed to do web browsing and therefore email through a web browser. It's supposed to do video conferencing and it's supposed to have word processing capabilities. And that's it. That's all it's supposed to do. And it's running Linux, which is free. It has no storage, instead having a memory card slot. And it runs off solar power, so it doesn't have a big wall wart, etc.
Right. Okay. Now, I just thought of something which, to me, is incredibly funny, which probably says a lot about me. Right. Solar-powered tablet, $35 in parts, which means that the display, which will be functional, won't be as high quality as, say, what's in the iPad.
Right.
Solar-powered, so you need sunlight to drive this thing.
Mm-hmm.
The display is probably really hard to read in sunlight.
Well, it is. It probably has, and we don't actually know this, it probably has some kind of battery, but it's not going to be a nine-hour battery.
And the charger's going to, or the solar panels are going to charge the battery. But I just find it to be incredibly funny that you'd have this device that would have a display that you can't see well in the sun, but you need solar power to drive it.
Yeah, but solar power counts, you know, being able to be powered from an incandescent light bulb, too.
Yeah, I know.
You know, when you're indoors. Because this whole thing is aimed at getting a computing device in the hands of India's students, and especially the poor students.
Right. And even though I'm making fun of the you can't see the tablet while it's charging and you want to use it aspect, which it's irrelevant. That's just me making a stupid joke. What a fantastic idea, making a computing device that people that couldn't otherwise afford something like this at all will be able to get their hands on one and actually use it.
Right. And, you know, so one of the things, the same group, so this is all being done through India's Human Resource Development Ministry. They announced what they were calling, was it a $100 laptop or a $10 laptop? Yeah, $10. They announced a $10 laptop in 2009 that ended up being a prototype for a handheld, you know, something that's a little bit bigger than an iPod Touch. And nothing ever came of that. That was over a year ago. So there's certainly some skepticism.
Well, you know, the whole $10 computer thing, mm-hmm. even if nothing ever comes to market, if they actually put the effort into trying to figure out how to make that happen,
mm-hmm.
that's still okay, because that means they probably figured out a lot of what they need to know to make a $35 tablet a reality.
Right. Well, and I think that it should be no surprise that this announcement is coming after the iPad, because what Apple has shown the world is that a tablet device can, you know, a smallish tablet device can serve most, if not all, of the functions that normal, non-creative, professionally creative, you know, computer consumers need.
Oh, right.
And so they went from trying to make, and this is why I mentioned the $10 laptop thing, making a tablet with a touchscreen interface is going to be cheaper than trying to make a laptop, because in part because there's fewer parts, and in part because it's, you know, it is small. So Apple basically sort of paved the way for this group to try to do this, and they did it with two universities worked together on the prototype. It was the I'm looking. Indian Institute of Technology and the Indian Institute of Science, which are two top technology schools in India.
Yeah, okay. You know, another thing that I like about the idea of this $35 tablet is that if you're using this as a student, you probably need something that's going to be durable. Mm-hmm. And durable. They're creating a device that doesn't have moving parts, like an iPad.
Mm-hmm. No hinges to break.
Yeah. So, yeah,
no,
so
no keys to break.
No keys to break. No spinning hard drive. No hinge on the lid to snap.
Yep.
No optical drive tray that pops open and breaks off. Nothing
right.
like that.
Nothing
so
like that.
Yeah, so you're creating a device that will better serve the students simply because it's going to be more durable and hopefully will last longer because of that.
Right, and I think that on the show, I know I've talked extensively about this, and I think I've done so here on the show with the two of us. I personally think that a tablet's a better metaphor for an educational environment anyway, because it removes that wall between the student and the teacher.
Right, right.
So, I mean, I hope that something comes out of this. And even if it comes out that it costs $50 to make or it costs $75 to make, the difference between a functioning $75 limited function tablet and, you know, a cheesy-ass, pardon my language, cheesy-ass netbook or a cheap laptop even. I mean, you know, if they can have this be anything under $50 would just be amazing. And, you know, I put in a couple of numbers in our article from Wolfram Alpha, which unfortunately the most recent data they have is 2008. But India's population was 1.18 billion with a GDP per capita of only $1,060. And compare that to us here in the States, and we have a per capita GDP of $45,200.
That's a huge disparity.
But it's a magnet. It's 45 times more. And, you know, so if they can hit this $35 price point, or, you know, the minister in charge of this place is still pretty ambitious. He says that with economies of scale, they can do it even cheaper. But if they can come even close to that, this could get some computing devices in the hands of a lot more people. And that is good for the entire world.
I agree.
And it doesn't compete with the iPad.
No, it doesn't. Which is why I made a point to bring that up when we first started talking about this, because I know that there are some people that get defensive about the products that they passionately love, and that's okay. But sometimes that blinds them to the fact that just because someone is making a device with a similar form factor, it doesn't necessarily mean they're trying to make something designed to compete with products that Apple makes.
Anyone who is going to be in the market for buying an iPad is not going to buy this thing instead.
You're absolutely right.
I mean, there's such a huge price discrepancy, and there's such a huge chasm of functionality between the two devices.
Right.
That someone who is in the income bracket to afford an iPad is not going to instead turn around and buy a device that costs a 15th as much that does substantially less. I mean, it's an apples and oranges kind of thing. It's like it's like saying that a Motorola Razr is competing with an iPhone.
You know, just on a side note, my first iPhone replaced a Motorola Razr.
Mine did too.
Yeah, there you go.
Mine did too. But, you know, what was it, 4 years later, you know, a Motorola Razr is probably, you know, it's still a really great looking flip phone. But, you know, you can probably get one for $15.
Oh, well, I have one sitting on the shelf in my office.
Yeah, anyone wants to give me $15 for mine, let me know. Just saying.
Yeah, mine's a T-Mobile phone. So, you know, just in case anyone needs it. Yeah, but look at that. We've gone from our Razr, and in my case, I had a Palm Pilot to go along with it. And then now sitting on my desk in front of me, here is my iPhone 4, my iPhone 3G, which is shut off, my iPod Touch, and my iPad, all within fingers touch.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, which clearly points out that I'm not in the target market that India's going after with its tablet.
No, it's not. It's not. It's, you know, it's aimed at lower. It's aimed at the developing world, and developing world needs products like this.
Now, I haven't done the math, so if someone wants to correct me, I'm okay with that. But if we look at what the average income is here in the United States, and then what that average income is in India,
well, we had GDP, we didn't have income.
Or excuse, okay, so GDP. All right, that $35 laptop, which would probably, since that's just parts, we're probably looking at, let's call it a $50 laptop. or tablet.
Sure.
That's still a substantial portion of someone's income.
Yeah, it's still actually a greater portion of GDP per capita than is an iPad. Well, actually, let's do the math real quick. So we've got 50 divided by 1060, so it's 4.7%, right? Duh. And let's just go with the low end iPad at $500 divided by 45,200. And that is 1.1%. So if you're, and this is really risky comparisons because GDP per capita has nothing to do with income per capita. GDP stands for gross domestic product. So basically it's a measure of how much stuff we make, how much wealth is created, et cetera. So anyway, the $50 tablet in India would still be five times as much as a percentage of the GDP per capita than the iPad is for us here in the States.
Right. So what we can glean out of that is that $35 or $50 tablet is still going to be a substantial dollar amount to someone in India living on the lower income that
to the hundreds of millions of poor people that live in India.
Right.
But then again, I mean, just realistically speaking, a lot of those poor people do not have the opportunity to go to university in India. So, anyway, be that as it may, we're going to get out of our depth here.
So how about if I say it's absolutely fantastic that India is looking at a way to make technology that can enhance education more affordable for the people that live in their country?
Yeah, and if this thing can come to market, you got to realize that everybody and their brother in the Asian OEM industry is going to get on doing something similar. And they're going to drive costs down and functionality up.
Right, right.
And that still won't really compete with what Apple's doing, because Apple already today competes so far above the rest of the PC industry dollar-wise, and their sales and profits are growing hand over fist.
Yeah, that's very true. And what that tells me is that there's definitely a market for Apple's products. There's definitely a segment of the consumer market and business market that is looking for the types of products that Apple offers.
Yep.
And they can afford it, or at least they can come up with the money for it.
Yep. So I guess to sum it up, we're both pretty excited about this. We hope that something actually comes out of this and that it's not more vaporware like the $10 laptop was.
Right. Yeah, this would be a very, very cool thing to see out in the wild.
Yep. Well, yeah, we probably won't see it, but whatever. For it to be seen in the wild, how's that?
Okay, yeah. Yeah, when I say, yeah, you're right, yeah. You're right.
I'm just being nitpicky.
No, that's okay. I'll let you be nitpicky every now and then.
Captain, nitpicker dead ahead. Recommend full phaser fire immediately.
And see, that's why you can get away with the nitpicky thing. Because you can turn around and throw your wharf. That just doesn't sound right, does it?
Wharf, madam. Not wolf. Jeff and I were talking about some of our favorite Star Trek Next Generation moments this morning after our staff meeting, because we're like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we came up with I object, I am not a merry man. and Lwaxana Troi, I think it's Lwaxana that calls him wolf, and he goes, "Wharf, madam, not wolf." Anyway, all right, we'll stop that. Instead, let's talk about the good folks at Eccentrics.
Okay. I guess if we're not going to talk about Star Trek, we might as well talk about Citrix.
We might as well.
Yeah. So, it's awesome. They're our sponsor again this week with their GoTo Assist Express product.
Yes.
Right. And for those of you that aren't familiar with what that is, it's a cool little service that lets you remotely and securely log in to someone else's computer and perform maintenance, teach them how to do things. And it doesn't require that the person on the receiving end know any special commands, know how to open up holes in their firewall, and they don't need to install anything extra. They just get an email with a link that they click, and it sets everything up for them.
Sets everything up, lets them give you permission, right? So, you know, this isn't some sort of, like, tool for the bad guys.
Right, right.
No one's going to be using this to break into your computer. You use this to help your friends and family, or, you know, or to do professional support, or if you need help from your friends and family to get that help.
Right. And it takes away their excuse of, geez, I'm too far away, I can't come look at your computer.
Right. And we know this because we've used that excuse. So the flip side is, and unfortunately, it takes away that excuse from us too.
Yes, yes, it does.
But that's okay because I mean the reality is that it makes it a lot less of a hassle to help someone. You know, I mean, we've talked a lot, Jeff, about the fact that both of us find it easier to help friends than and strangers than it is to help our own family.
Yeah, well, I think we both have dysfunctional families, so that doesn't help either.
No, I love my family. However, I discovered long ago that I have substantially less patience for helping them with computer problems. Fortunately, my little sister has long surpassed me.
Oh, good. So you've told her about Go to Assist Express, right?
She already knows about it.
And, okay, good.
But so I had the twin benefits of A, having become curmudgeonly, and B, her having surpassed me. So now most everybody goes to her anyway. But there's still those people that we need to help. And this lets you do it remotely, and it lets you do it easily. And, you know, when you've got friends or family across the country, you know, or even across town sometimes.
Sure.
You know, this makes it a lot easier to help people. So we want you to check it out because it's a good product. These guys have been doing this for a while. It works with Windows and the Mac.
Right. And it's a great option for helping friends and family, or if you're a consultant, for helping your clients.
Yeah, supporting people remotely. And better yet, you can try it for 30 days. If you go to gotoassist.com/machine, you'll find all the information there. You get 30 days. You can try it for free. So, you know, you got someone that you need to help as a one-off. Well, you can even do it for free for 30 days.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and that's an offer that's available because of us, because they're sponsoring us. So we would like you to support them because they support us. And let's take a bird's eye view look at the iPhone 4.
Yeah, I think it's about time. All right,
yeah,
so is there something in specific that you really want to dive into right away with the iPhone 4?
No, I just thought that it would be a good idea for you and I to weigh in on this because I had a death in the family, and then I got sick thanks to the airplane. And so we haven't had a chance to podcast in the last couple of weeks.
So sorry about all the crappiness, but it's really glad to have. I'm really glad to have you back.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it. And so, but you know, there's what I thought would be useful to our listeners because you know everybody's been talking about this stuff ad nauseum, but because we're in some ways approaching it fresh, we can sort of take that bird's eye view and you know and maybe offer some with some perspective on what's been going on in the last month, actually see where we are.
I think that sounds good. And so should we get our antenna perspectives just out of the way?
Sure, let's start with that.
All right. So, Brian, do you drop calls on your iPhone 4?
I do.
Okay, and it's important for people to know that, yes, you're dropping calls on your iPhone 4, but you happen to be in an area where you have a crappy cell signal.
I have miserable reception in my home. I need to get a microcell. That's all there is to it. I had just as many drop calls on my 3GS. I'm sorry, my 3G.
Right. Okay. And I went from a 3G to a 4. And in my office, I have okay coverage. Mm-hmm. And I don't drop calls. It doesn't matter how I hold my iPhone 4. And it didn't matter how I held my iPhone 3. My coverage was what it was. I don't drop calls. And, you know, really the only people I know that are dropping calls are people that are in situations like you. Meaning,
right, and I'm dropping calls
signal
because of the signal strength, period, not because of an issue with the iPhone. As a matter of fact, I have not personally been able to duplicate the death grip effect on my iPhone myself.
Now, I have been able to duplicate the death grip, but not to drop calls. And I wasn't able to do that until I installed the update that offers the more... I guess I'll use the term realistic signal bar indicator.
Or at least that's what Apple tells us.
Right. And so what I think the reality is that previously I was seeing 5 bars in my office, which I knew couldn't be right. Mm. And so then I'd hold my phone so that I was covering the antennas and the signal wouldn't drop. After the update, it's like 3 bars in my office and I can get it to drop down to 1. And my signal or my calls are still just as good as they were before. And sometimes the signal will go back up again, too. So,
and I don't know if it's because I'm so fat that my, you know, that my fat is insulating the antennas.
Just so you know, you're not that fat.
It seemed like a funny thing to say. I don't know if it's a matter of how little I sweat or the salt content of my skin. I don't know what it is. I personally have not been able to duplicate it, and a lot of people haven't been able to duplicate it. A lot of people haven't been able to duplicate it because they're in areas with really strong reception. And other people just simply can't duplicate it. I happen to be one of those people. So it hasn't been a big deal to me at all. And the thing about it is, Jeff, it really seems like the only people that care about this are the blogosphere, the echo chamber.
Sure, sure. The people that I have seen in public complaining about the iPhone, I tweeted about this at one point. I was sitting in a Starbucks, and there were people that were vocally complaining about the iPhone signal strength and dropping calls. Mm-hmm. And none of those people owned an iPhone. All of the people in the Starbucks that owned iPhones are going, I don't have a problem with my signal.
Well, I think that there's a very natural effect that have been going on with people who have chosen Android, who are able to find, and I this is going to sound so snotty, and yes, I am an elitist pig. I will embrace that reality, okay? And I understand this, and I accept this. So you can take what I'm saying with a grain of salt, or, you know, just, you know, pitch your iPod into the lake or whatever. Whatever. My point is this. I think it's a very natural and understandable reaction for people who did not jump on the iPhone bandwagon, but who had doubts or, you know, like they wish they could have or did. And I think it's very natural for those people to sort of pick up on this as an affirmation for their choice.
Sure.
And I don't mean that in a derogatory nature. I think that's in a derogatory, snotty, you know, elitist way. I think that's just a very natural thing for people to do.
Well, I think it also fits in with the whole, you know, thing about people liking teams and their own groups and the comfort that comes with that. Because, you know, we're at a very base level, we're pack animals.
Sure.
Or herd animals. And so if you...
Or predators, though. How does that work? We're pack animals.
Yeah,
certainly a lot of people do have herd mentalities, but I think...
That's true, yeah.
That we are much more of a a pack.
Okay, so
sorry.
So we're pack animals. And
anthropology semantics aside.
Yeah, and you know it's funny because I started with pack, and I thought, well, no, it's not like marauding wolves.
Yeah,
typically. Yeah, so you're right. Pack animals, you're right. Okay. And what was our topic today? Oh, iPhone, that's right.
Yeah, no. It's the origins of man. Oh, wait, that's a different podcast.
I see. I jump around from so many podcasts, I can't remember.
Whore.
I am a podcast whore.
You are a podcast whore.
Yeah, I am.
And you don't even do it for the money.
No, I do it because it's so much fun.
I think that makes you a podcast slut.
I am a podcast slut.
I think that's actually how that works, buddy. I hate to break it to you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's okay. I own my inner slut.
So we're talking about the fact that that people do like to, you know, stick within whatever their perceived group is. That was
sure.
That's where you're going.
And so that gives them some comfort in, if they're not an iPhone owner, there's the comfort in saying, oh, iPhones lose their signal, crappy phone. And, you know, and everyone gets their chuckle out of it. And the people that have the iPhone, well, they're in that group. And they're all, well, no, I don't drop my calls. And so, you know, that whole thing plays into it, too.
Right. And in the meanwhile, Apple is selling as many of these things as they can, as they can make. There's still a waiting list to get an iPhone. Like right now. Let's check the Apple Store right now. Wait, can you buy them? You can't buy them online at the Apple Store, can you? Or can you?
Yeah, you can buy them online at the Apple Store.
I tested out these things.
All right, so while you're looking that up, I'll add in another point, which is that the one thing people love more than building up the underdog to be the hero is tearing down the hero.
Right.
And Apple has historically been the underdog, or at least for a long time. And
that was a big reason why we have jobs, right?
Yes.
Because people rallied around, Apple's fans rallied around the underdog, right? So we're seeing two sides of the same coin. So please go ahead.
Oh, no, that's it right there. But I was going to just interject based on what you said. Do you remember Power Computing's slogan that they had with their little posters, let's kick Intel's ass?
I have them all.
Okay. See, that's another reason why we love you.
Speaking of which, by the way, I really want to sell a 20th anniversary Mac. So, you know, let me know if you want to buy a 20th anniversary Mac.
Oh,
it came from Johnny Ive's personal store.
Oh, wow. So even more cooler-est.
I did get it directly from Johnny Ives. Johnny Ives gave it to another Apple engineer who sold it to me.
So, in Kevin Bacon speak, you're just 2 degrees of separation from Johnny Ive.
Yes, but I actually did think it was super cool that I was able to get. But I don't have room for them. I sold one of them. I bought two of them. I sold one of them, and I need to sell the other. And I would like to sell the other. I need to make space.
All right.
So please, if you want to buy a TAM, talk to Uncle Brian.
That's right. You know, sorry, I can't buy it from you. I actually have my Mac Classic sitting on a pedestal in the corner of my office, and that's all I have room for. It really is sitting on a pedestal there.
That's awesome. Okay, so the website is showing 3-week availability for the iPhone 4. Still.
Okay. Okay, and I think if you go into the stores, your wait is about the same.
It may be a couple of days. Well, I don't know. Actually, I have no evidence of that whatsoever. So yeah, it is probably going to be roughly similar. So here we are a month later. Apple is making these things in quantity, and they're selling every one that they can make. So clearly, and Tim Cook actually addressed this. Jeff, if you remember in the, of course, I realize that you know this too, but in the conference call with the analysts, which took place last, was it Tuesday?
Right.
Tim said, unfortunately, we don't know if the antenna issues have had an effect on us because we're selling every iPhone we can make. Therefore, we don't know if we've had reduced demand because, I mean, there's literally no way of measuring.
Right. The only way they would know is if the demand diminished so much that people didn't have to wait in line now or wait on
right.
a list.
It, you know, and right now, if the demand was a week, and we somehow knew that there was a time, there was a point where, I mean, like, you know, if we could see the alternate us, where the wait is 3 weeks, but the wait, or like, I'm going to go off all, like, really stupid science fiction-y on this, which is, I guess, fitting for this particular episode. If we could somehow see into another universe where there were no antenna issues and we saw that the wait time on these things was 6 weeks, well, we'd know that there was some kind of effect. But we don't know that. We can't know that. The reality is that they're selling more than they've ever sold before. They're getting fewer returns than they've ever gotten, or at least than they got for the 3GS.
Right.
And the only people that seem to care about this are Apple haters and people looking for page views.
Right. So it looks like the popularity of the device has not been impacted, as far as we can tell, from antenna-related issues. The majority of people, substantial majority of people, are not actually having issues with their antennas.
Though some are. It's not that this is not an issue, but it...
Yeah, for the people that are having a problem, it's a very serious issue.
You know, and the people who, you know, just can't hold their iPhone, and, you know, it's not natural for them to hold it in another way, it's going to be a deal killer, unless, of course, you have a case that insulates you.
Yeah. Okay, so on the case thing, OtterBox sent me their new Defender series for the iPhone 4, which... it should be available by the end of this week, actually. So I immediately put it on my phone so that I could start playing around with a real case and see how that impacts my my signal bars. And what I found is that it doesn't make any difference.
You can still ultimately with the case on?
No. No, but my signal will go up and down kind of all of its own accord anyhow, and I wasn't dropping calls by holding my phone with the death grip before I put the case on. So really, the only benefit that I'm getting out of having the case is exactly what you would expect. It's offering protection for the phone, physical protection.
Right, and that's the only reason why. I did get one of Apple's bumper cases.
I ordered the bumper case also because I figured if I was going to use a case long term on my iPhone, I'd want something as minimalist as possible, and it was probably
ideally. I would love to get another Vaha case, right? But I don't. As the last time I checked, which was about 2 weeks ago, they still hadn't announced a case because they're really crazy. They actually want to have units in hand before they announce products for them.
I need something
to protect my iPhone because I'm too much of a klutz when it comes to my devices. So the bottom line being, I got a bumper case because it was available because I needed some kind of protections on those corners for in case I dropped it. I otherwise would not really carry a case until I could get a Vaha one.
Yeah, you know, and for me, I've been going commando with my iPhones for a while now. Which probably paints an image that people really didn't want. So, sorry, everyone.
And it looks like they have finally announced iPhone 4 cases.
Oh, excellent.
They've got that same flap.
So, you're going to go with the blue and white racing stripe sort of thing that you had before?
I had blue and white for my original iPhone. Then I got a black and white for the 3G.
Oh, that's right.
I don't know if I'll get the flap because I think I've learned to not pocket dial people.
You used to pocket dial a lot.
I used to pocket dial Dave, and I call it finger dialing because it wasn't pocket dialing. It was when I would set my iPhone down, and it would go to my favorites by default because that's usually where I was calling people from. And Dave Hamilton, the Mac Observer and the Mac Geek Gab, his number was positioned in the perfect place for me to brush it with my finger as I was setting my iPhone down, especially when I was driving.
Yeah. Now you did that accidental dial thing on me a couple times.
Excellent.
But you did it a lot.
I did. Well, Dave. I just but because Dave's 3 hours later than me, or earlier. So I was doing it in the middle of his night. He was not happy with me.
No, he was not happy.
It's like, I hope you understand, Brian, why I'm taking a ring off of your phone number. Yeah, I understand. Anyway, I think we were talking about the cases. We were talking about the bumper giveaway. It's going to cost Apple $175 million. To me, anyone that's having a problem, this eliminates the problem, which I think that for just about everybody, because I think that a lot of people have been exposed to the issue that some people are having issues, yet those things are still selling. It clearly has solved the problem in the eyes of the vast majority of the public.
You know, I don't think Apple even needed to give away the cases.
It was a nice touch.
It was a nice touch, and if it keeps the customers that are having issues and have been complaining happy, okay, great. That means they're doing the right thing for the customers. But I have to think that at least a little bit of that was. What, or a little bit of the decision to do the free cases was a move to try and get the media off their back.
Yeah, Apple was a little bit more reactionary than is their want. So you may be onto something.
True. There. Yeah, well, they had a little bit of damage control, right or wrong, that they had to take care of, and I think they did a really good job considering the situation that they had to deal with.
I don't know that. Well, see, here's the deal. A lot of people were very unsatisfied with the press conference that Apple threw. But the reality is that the people that were unsatisfied were those who were convinced that there was a problem. So the only thing that was going to convince those people that Apple had done a good job was if Apple basically said, yes, you are right, our product sucks, and we're going to do a recall.
And that wasn't going to happen. And certainly a recall was never going to happen, because the only way Apple would do a recall is if there was some sort of physical threat to people's health or safety. And now, had people dialed their phone, put it up to their ear, and their head exploded... Recall. Some people aren't happy with the potential attenuation issues with the antenna. Not a recall.
Right. Right.
Although, can you imagine if people were holding their iPhone up and their heads exploded?
That would be a PR problem. You might actually be able to quote someone's name in Apple PR for that one, maybe.
Yeah, I'm thinking so.
So again, antenna issue. To me, it's largely. I think it's dealt with. I think that it's clear that some people are having issues. Those people can get a free case from Apple that will solve the problem. And so I don't really see what other issue there is. I personally believe that Apple is telling the truth, even if it's a skewed truth, that other smartphones have the same issue. There were certainly people before Apple that were posting videos of other smartphones that were having the same similar problem, where if you touch them in a certain way, that they too would lose signal strength. I mean, it's, Apple's not making that up out of whole cloth, I guess is my point.
Yeah, every cell phone I've had, I have had to adapt the way I hold the phone to take into account where the antennas are. It's not like this was something new to me. And I know a lot of people are having to do the Vulcan phone pinch thing to hold their phone so that they don't lose their signal. It looks kind of funny. But the point is, I've always had to adapt the way I hold my phone to accommodate the antennas that are in it. So, yeah. Now, we've been talking about the whole free case thing, which reminded me, have you seen our article about the Samsung giving away their Galaxy S phone for free?
I have, but before we talk about that,
we should probably do a sponsor.
Let's go and talk about the Smile on My Mac and Text Expander.
I think that sounds excellent. Okay. So, yes, Smile on My Mac is another one of our sponsors this week, which is absolutely fantastic. And they are the makers of Text Expander and Text Expander Touch. And if you're not familiar with those applications, they are like automatic text expander, hence Text Expander, utilities. So you type a shortcut, an abbreviation that you create, and when you type that, your computer or your iPad or iPhone or iPod Touch recognizes what that is and then expands it into the full sentence or a full paragraph, or on your Mac, it can even be a script or a photograph or, you know, some other image that appears where you typed that abbreviation. So it can save a ton of typing time and eliminate a lot of accuracy errors. And you can synchronize your snippet collections between your Mac and your iPhone and your iPad and iPod Touch.
Right.
All right. So now the thing is, though, on the iOS-based devices, since Apple didn't originally support background application things happening. Mm-hmm. What they had to do was come up with this really clever way of allowing other applications to access your Text Expander database so that you could actually expand your snippets in other applications. And there's like, 30 applications now for the iPhone and iPod Touch that support Text Expander?
30, yes. I was actually trying to look those up while you were talking.
Yeah, there you go. So 30 applications, which is awesome because it adds a lot of functionality. Right. And saves you from having to do a lot of extra tiny little thumb typing.
Write Room, Simple Note, Notebook, Dactylo, Spell Checker, Garage Sale, a tourist attendance, iThoughts, Vietnamese keyboard, because that's probably a big one. Time Master, Hippo Remote Pro, Raconteur, Twitlator Pro, Twitter for iPhone, Simply Tweet, Twitbird Pro. There's a bunch of apps. It's handy. It's cool, and they're a good company. We want you to support them.
Yes, and when I sit here and wax poetic about Text Expander, it's not because they're a sponsor. It's because these are applications that I need to be able to do my job every day.
Right, and if you go to smileonmymac.com/AWR for our old name.
I thought AWR was the abbreviation for Apple Contacts Machine.
And we're going to come up with a new logo any day now, too. You'll find find a 20% discount still for a disc label. But it's a Text Expander that they're sponsoring us with this week. And we appreciate it, and we appreciate you for appreciating them.
Yeah, we do.
So, Samsung it is, right? Or LG.
Right. Samsung, no, it's okay. Samsung. Yeah, it's their Galaxy S smartphone.
So, if I understand it, basically what they said is that we want people who are unhappy with the iPhone to experience the Galaxy, even if we have to give it to them.
Right. So, what they were doing was watching Twitter, looking for tweets where people were complaining about their iPhone 4. And so they picked some of the people that were complaining and then sent them tweets and said, hey, sorry you're not happy with your current phone. Can we send you a Galaxy S so that you can compare it and see if you like it better?
This was to a few people in the UK, right?
Right, right. And so, yeah, so they were just giving away Galaxy S smartphones to a bunch of people. And it wasn't a scam. They were really doing it.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what kinds of tweets and online reviews come out of that from those people that did get them. Because there weren't a ton of them. I think it was a brilliant publicity move on their part.
Yeah, assuming the phone is good and people start playing with it and go, actually, I really like this. So there's definitely a gamble in it, but it could be a really good move.
Well, and you know, until then, people are talking about it.
Yeah, well, clearly, I mean, here we are.
Here we are talking about it. I just think it's kind of funny that, you know, like, dude, if you got to give it away, you know, just saying, you give it to pray for.
That's true. And so I'm sure that there's people out there going, wow, so the Galaxy S is doing so well that that Samsung's now having to ask people to take
it. And you know, which brings me to the other topic I wanted to cover on our show that is shockingly running late. And that's that you know, everybody, so it used to be that everybody was constantly preaching Apple's doom, right? We have the whole Apple death knell counter.
Right, which doesn't count very quickly anymore.
No, not anymore, although, you know, it was a few months ago that I was able to find one, which was weird. But and that's where we just collected all the people that said that Apple is about to fail, right? It's at MacObserver.com/Apple death knell. And now, you know, there's been sort of a few controversies, like semi-controversies, really. There was the Intentigate. And there is a lot of people, really, they did everything they could to make hay out of the iPhone 4 not being able to connect to the Wi-Fi network at WWDC keynote, which in reality, of course, was not about the iPhone 4, but about...
It was limitations of the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, how many people were using Spectrum in the hall?
Right.
Had nothing to do with the iPhone. There were computers.
Yeah, so it was hundreds.
Yeah, there were computers, and they couldn't get out anywhere either for the same reason.
Yeah, it's actually quite surprising that people didn't start glowing.
Yeah.
or cooking.
Well, we may have. The jury's still out on that. It's only been a couple of months.
Okay.
But my point is that you know, people really tried to make hay out of that. I guess that's about it. But nonetheless, that's been cause for people to say that, you know, the iPhone 4 is doomed. Oh, there's the issue with whether or not there's a battery issue with iOS 4 on iPhone 3GSs. And I think, by the way, personally, my guess is that the battery issue is that the multitasking is what's killing the batteries.
That could be. Now, I do have on my second generation iPod Touch, I've noticed that my battery life seems to be shorter than it was. But that's totally
anecdotal.
Are
you killing apps as you go? Because if you're not,
matter.
It will be.
I can't multitask on this one.
Oh, okay.
It's only the third generation iPod Touch that you can multitask on.
Gotcha, right. And I don't have a 3GS to test it with either. So the point is that, you know, these two little tiny things have caused some people to crow. And some people are going to be like, aha, Apple, you know, they're going to get it now. And, you know, they're too big for their britches. They don't, you know, they don't know how to be a big company and all these other problems. But, of course, in reality, they just had the biggest quarter ever, and they're going to have the biggest quarter ever next quarter, too. And following quarter, they're probably going to blow that one away.
Right. And it comes back to the whole thing about people loving to tear down the
exactly.
hero.
And the as a related aspect of that, every time there's been a new Android phone that's going to be coming out, or a new Palm device that's going to be coming out, although really it's been limited to that. I don't think anyone's said that Windows 7 is going to kill anything. People have been... Windows 7 Mobile, sorry. Or Windows 7 Mobile, whatever, I think is what I usually call
Windows it. Windows 7 Mobile Personal Enhancement Experience,
right.
Or something like that.
Every time the new phones come out, you know, people talk about what an iPhone killer it's going to be, and yet none of them are. They're just not. I think one analyst actually put it very succinctly recently. I think that you covered this one, where he said that new Android devices are not going to appeal to Apple customers. New Android devices are going to appeal to Windows 7 people and Android people, and some non-smartphone users, but they're not going to bring iPhone customers to the Android camp.
You know, yeah, I agree with that, and I think the really big thing out of that whole perspective, each phone that comes out, this is the iPhone killer. Okay, what that really shows is that people are looking at the iPhone and saying, this is the standard. And that this is what everyone else needs to shoot for.
Right. But I think that, well, I think it'd be more accurate to call, you know, the droid X-Killer. You know, I mean, like, I'm going to have to start firing phasers at myself again.
Just set him to stun this time.
Recommend kill. The whole just sort of, you know, gloating about Apple being about to fall. It's kind of interesting. It's no more accurate today than it was back when Apple was an $8 billion a year company. You know, they were still making profits on computers. And they were still doing just fine, and I find the whole, you know, attempt to turn into a frenzy, the failed attempt to turn into a frenzy by pundits and watchers and Apple haters, it's just kind of funny.
Yeah,
that's my point.
It is, and to a degree, it gets kind of old. I mean, every new phone that comes out, oh, this one's the iPhone killer. Next one. Oh, no, really, this one will be the iPhone killer. Well, I think part of the problem is that all these companies are playing catch-up. And Apple is setting the bar that they all are moving towards and showing them the features that they're going to start adding into their devices. And if you're always in that reactionary mode, you're not going to be in a very good position to leapfrog past the company that's in the innovating mode.
Well, and it's even more than that, Jeff. Everything you just said is totally valid. But it's even more than that is that Apple is in the catbird seat. They control the software, they control the hardware, they control the user experience. They can make that user experience better than anybody else possibly can. And the killer app on the iPhone, what so many people seem to have not understood, is not the App Store, it's not the phone, it's not visual voicemail, it's the user experience. That's the killer app, that's what has made this device so incredibly successful, and that's what no one else can match.
That's true. Now, we finally have one company, I think, that's in a position where they potentially could match Apple in the user experience because they now have control over the whole widget.
Right.
And that would be HP because they bought Palm.
Right. But what HP still won't have, they still won't have a unifying piece of software like iTunes.
That's true.
And the the iTunes aspect of managing the whole iPhone iOS experience is still something that no one else can duplicate, and I don't think anyone's going to be able to be in a position to duplicate it. But we both agree that HP could do something really cool with WebOS.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that they do.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jeffy, we have gone over, buddy.
See, isn't this how it works? We don't get podcasts out every single week, but when we do get a podcast out, it's like we just can't stop talking.
Yep, that's us. So take us out.
Okay, I can totally do that. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to acm@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. And if you want to see a little bit more about what goes on inside my head, you can follow me on Twitter. That's twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/tmobrian with a Y. Actually, it's just TM O'Brien. But that's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded for TMO. That is all for this week. And we'd like to thank both Citrix and Smile on My Mac for sponsoring us.
That's right. And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
Trapped by lies that we both know. I can't.